Support for WPR comes from the Madison Museum of Contemporary Art, an independent organization dedicated to creating experiences that educate, reflect, and inspire. More is at mmoca.org.
Support for WPR comes from WIPS with Toward One Wisconsin, a conference on equity, diversity, and inclusion, May 7th and 8th in Eau Claire. Registration information and more is at t1w.org.
This is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark here with Family Doc Zorba Pastor. Zorba here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice, and some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. Now, if you'd like to talk with Zorba, if you have a question, give us a call, 1-800-462-7413. 800-462-7413. And along with your calls, always some interesting research. Zorba, tell us about it.
We're going to talk about Aquafina. And where does that water really come from?
Ah, it's been in the news lately.
It's been in the news, and we're going to talk about that and bottled water. And the obesity epidemic, is it catchy? The Framingham Heart Study looking at obesity among friends and family. Some fascinating data that we will chat
about. Indeed, that one's been in the news, too, and indeed it is fascinating.
Has.
We have, of course, our medical myth buster later on in the hour. And what's our recipe, Zorba?
Vicky, shrimp and bacon couscous.
And guess who we're going to be talking with?
Vicky?
Vicky is right. That's coming up. 800-462-7413. A listener with us now in Shreveport, Louisiana. Hi.
Hi there.
How can we help you?
About 22 years ago when I was in high school, the tops of my feet began to itch when I would go to bed at night. And it was unbearable. Over the years, I have a few major spots, the tops of my feet, palms of my hands, the back of my neck, but it's not always confined to that area. And the itching's not like a surface itching. You scratch, but it doesn't. You can tell that it's beneath the surface. And the itching is just unbearable. It will wake me up with just a fevered itch, you know, and I'm just scratching.
Yeah.
But there are times when I cannot go to sleep for 2 or 3 days because the itching just will not stop.
Yeah, well, now it's been going on for 30 years?
Pretty close, yeah.
Yeah, well, you sure it's time to ask a doctor about it? I mean, you don't want to wait a few more years?
Well, about a year ago, I went to the doctor for sinus.
Oh, okay.
And this issue.
Yeah.
And when I told her about the itching, she just kind of scratched her head and said, buy this Eucerin cream and put that on. Well, that didn't work, but as I began taking the Allegra D for my sinuses, I realized that I was no longer itching.
Oh.
When I ran out of my Allegra, then the itching came back.
Uh-huh.
So I immediately refilled my Allegra D, and that keeps the itching away.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm concerned about is, at some point, is my body going to stop recognizing the Allegra for my sinus problem, which can be rather severe, and you know, so what do I do?
Uh-huh. Well, first of all, you know, I think seeing a doctor once every 30 years is fine. You know, once when you're 30, once when you're 60, once when you're 90,
90,
you know, way to go,
yeah.
Way to go, once when you're 110. I mean, that's it. You know, I mean, my business
would be 120.
We'd go 120.
Yeah, yeah,
that's
so,
it.
Yeah,
well,
sorry.
You know, but you don't
I
do
never
the
was
math.
Math.
At 90, you don't do math that goes to 110.
Yeah,
that's right. That's right. Come on. You have a little dementia and a little math problem. You didn't catch that.
Right.
But getting back to it, the fact is an antihistamine is working for you. Over-the-counter Claritin, which is a generic over-the-counter pretty similar to Allegra, that would probably work too. The D in Allegra D, by the way, is pseudoephedrine, and that's probably not doing it, but it might. And, you know, this may be an allergic reaction to something. Could be the soap you're using, although over a period of 30 years, I'm sure you've used different soaps.
Correct.
You don't always use the same. You're not like a Dial guy, and you always use yellow Dial. I have an Aunt Myrtle, God bless her, may she rest in peace, and she only used yellow Dial from the time she was probably 20 to the rest of her life. She always had yellow Dial in her house.
Brand.
That was it.
Brand loyalty.
Yes, it was brand loyalty. That's exactly it. Getting back to the cause of your itch, that doctor was right to scratch her head because she wasn't exactly sure what was going on. Scratching, of course, is what you're doing, so there was a pun intended.
Uh-huh.
Ah, at the time. But the reality is it may be a reaction to soap, you know, just generally, maybe some dry skin. If it works, Stick with it. It's been going on for 30 years. I have no further insight. And I wouldn't expect it not to work in the future, but, it certainly is a possibility. People have these itching things, and we don't quite understand them. We know antihistamines generally reduce the body's desire for an itch. What happens is it changes the itch is the pain fiber in your skin, and the pain fiber that fires intermittently is sometimes interpreted as an itch. That can be one of the things, mm-hmm. and the antihistamine tamps that down, so it's not as sensitive. So I just stick with the Allegra
D. It's lucky you came across the sinus itch.
Yeah, you're lucky you had the sinus, because going in for the sinus infection solved the 30-year problem that you had. Yeah. Now I've got a question. You said sometimes you can't sleep for 3 days?
Yeah, the itching will, and the itching only comes on at night.
Well, the reality is I would continue with the Allegra D, so good luck.
Thank you.
Thank you for the call. We appreciate it. At 1-800-462-7413. Let's see now, Zorba, if we can help a listener in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Hi.
Hi.
What's up?
Well, I'm 25 years old. I've been fairly healthy my whole life. I've always been in cheerleading and gymnastics and basketball. And 3 years ago when I got pregnant, I started noticing my hands getting numb a lot in college. And so when I would take notes, my hands would numb and I'd have to shake my hand out. And lately, within the past year, it's gotten painful. When I talk on the phone, when I drive, when I sleep at night, it gets extremely painful. I wake up about every 30 to 45 minutes with my hands numb.
Ouch. Have you seen a doctor about this?
Well, I did go in and see a doctor. At the time right now, I don't have any insurance. So when I talked to him, he had said that it could possibly be carpal tunnel syndrome.
Right. And that really is what it sounds like to me. It sounds like carpal tunnel. And I've got a couple suggestions, with that. And carpal tunnel is a common symptom of pregnancy. I mean,
it is.
Oh, yeah. You can it's a pregnancy and carpal tunnel go hand in hand, no pun intended. But they really aren't really as part of it. Often when you're done with the pregnancy, the carpal tunnel goes away, but not always. But how much time do you spend on the computer?
Well, see, that's the thing. I just graduated with my bachelor's, and
congratulations.
Thank you. And I am going into law school in 2 weeks.
Mm. Okay.
So it'll be every day.
Okay, so every day you'll be on there. Just a couple of other things with that. You use a regular mouse. Is it more the right hand or left hand?
It has been more of the right hand.
Mm-hmm. And you're right dominant? You're right, Dominic. Okay, I've got a couple of great ideas for you. Mm-hmm. First of all, you want to lessen it. I mean, obviously, that's the goal. Seeing a doctor is not really essential for some of the things I'd recommend. When you sleep at night, go to a medical supply store, good drug store, and get wrist splints.
Okay.
And these are splints that basically you wear at night, and they keep you from kind of putting your head, which is a 16 to 18-pound ball, mm-hmm. on your wrist over where the carpal tunnel is. The carpal tunnel is at the base of the wrist, in the palm of the hand, below the palm of the hand, below the thumb, where the hand and the arm join. In that area, you sort of want to keep from pressure on it. That's really what you're looking for. So a wrist splint helps. Another thing that helps when you're in front of a keyboard is a gel pad. These are pads that you buy. They're kind of thick. They're gel. You put it in front of the keyboard. That's another way that you treat it that can be very useful. They also have ergonomic keyboards where the keyboard splits in half. And so you have your hands kind of in the air. They're a little bit goofy to use. People know how to use it. Gel pad is easy. My final recommendation is a trackball instead of a mouse. And learn, once you get a trackball, they're really kind of interesting. You can learn to use the trackball with your left hand as well as your right hand. I can't write with my left hand, but I can use a trackball with my left hand. And what happens is you can learn to use the trackball, and then you can switch hands. So you're not mousing it all the time. A lot of carpal tunnel is because we only mouse with our dominant hand. So those would be my suggestions on what you could do. But I think it's carpal tunnel and... So,
okay.
Good luck to you.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks a lot. We appreciate the call here on Zorba Pastor and Your Health. 800-462-7413. Well, Zorba, you mentioned news from Aquafina, one of the water
peoples. We've talked a number of times here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health about water, tap water versus bottled water. And you've been saying through the years, hey, there's nothing really special about this bottled water. Well, voila.
Voila. It turns out that Aquafina, which is a fancy name. I had no idea that Aquafina is actually bottled by the PepsiCo company.
I didn't either.
Did you have any idea? Yeah. I had no idea. The PepsiCo's company is Aquafina.
Well,
Aquafina.
Coke has another one. I forget the brand.
Yeah. But I mean, Aquafina sounds kind of French, you know, or does it sound Northern European?
Yeah.
It's Aquafina.
And they always think with these.
And then they're going to now list where the source comes from. And one of the sources is tap water.
I thought it was the only source. Yeah.
Well, it shows bottled water is made with tap water. Well, maybe it is the only source in there, but it says tap water. They may use some spring water with it, but they use just tap water. That's what it says. Well, they haven't put it in yet. But the news was tap water is used in the making of Aquafina.
Yeah, and now they're actually owning up to this and putting it on their label.
They're owning up to it because there are a lot of issues now with all the bottled water that's being sold, all of the plastic bottles that are going into landfill. New York City, San Francisco are beginning to hype their tap water because people are drinking less and less tap water, saying, well, the tap water isn't any good. It turns out New York City tap water is dynamite. You know, there's fluoride in it, which is really good for children as they're growing up, for their teeth. It's safe to drink. And all of a sudden to be drinking all this bottled water, it's a $15 billion industry, huge industry. But that means there's a lot of carbon footprint. And there's a lot of carbon footprint because you've got to take the bottled water from the source, the tap at the PepsiCo company, and move it into your source. So there's the energy of actually the physical energy of moving it. And to me, it's much ado about nothing. Tap water, put it in your bottle, get a bottle that you like, and fill it up every day when you go to work.
But now the Aquafina people and all the other bottled water people will say, yes, this is the source of our water, but we do purify this water before we bottle it.
Yeah, well, you know what I'd like to do? I'd like them to come out with information on exactly what do they do to purify it. What is purified water? What's bad about water? When you look at tap water is purified. They don't just take tap water out of Lake Michigan in Chicago and out of the aquifers under the ground. They take it, they test it, they may add chlorine to it to make sure that there's nothing in it. They look at the mineral content. They may add fluoride, which is what they do in municipal sources. So there's actually, there's a lot of stuff that goes into water to make it potable. It's a big thing in society.
Yeah, but
and what they've done is they've sold us a bill of goods with bottled water. Now, it's better than soda, no doubt about it.
Right.
Doesn't have wasted calories, doesn't have high fructose corn syrup, doesn't have the stuff with NutraSweet or Splenda. So it's better than that, but...
Well, now, but listeners to this program in our town, as you know, Zorba, will be saying, hey, wait a minute. The city water may not be all that great. Sometimes it's okay, sometimes it isn't, depending on the well. There can be problems with tap water that may be more serious than the problems of the situation with bottled water.
Well, I think you have to look at your local situation and look at, what the drinking water is like in your area. Have there been any problems? Is there any corruption which occurs, in the municipal water supply? And have there been problems, as you mentioned, in some wells in the city, it may not taste good. It may have iron deposits in it or magnesium. Those are different issues. The fact is, if you look globally across America, probably 95% or 98% of the cities, 95% or 98% of the time have water that is absolutely delicious and tastes well. But when it's cold and you buy it cold, it tastes better. You know, we like cold water versus tap water.
Sure.
And the advantage of bottled water is it's cold.
And you don't buy the purification process thing.
Well, I don't buy it. Now, other people buy it. And what they do is they buy a filter, like the Breta filter. So they buy the filter and then they never change the filter, a lot of them, but they take filtered water, they put it in the refrigerator, and they say it tastes good. I have never been able to taste the difference between one water and another. Consumer Reports has done taste tests, and albeit if you take out the minerals, they taste bad. And I've been to the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, and I've been in houses where the water comes out and it's brown. Well, that doesn't taste very good. But when you look at Consumer Reports with tasting regular water, you try to see whether or not people can really taste the difference in double-blind tests. They can't.
800-462-7413, toll-free. And a listener now in Janesville, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hello. Love the show.
Thank you. How can we help you?
I'm curious if I'm doing any damage to my body with only sleeping 3 hours a night.
How do you feel when you wake up?
I feel great. I'll sometimes run 2-3 days straight, then go down for 3 hours. It doesn't matter when I get my 3 hours, but it's always 3 hours.
Well, there's got to be something wrong with you. I mean, you can't function on, nobody can function, Zorba, on 3 hours.
That is a really tiny amount of sleep. Tom, when you did your show, your early morning show, how much sleep did you get?
Maybe 4 or 5 hours.
4 or 5 hours. Yeah. How many years did you do that for?
Oh, quite a few.
Quite a few years.
I lost track after a while.
Quite a few years. Well, maybe that's because you're only sleeping 4 to 5 hours.
Yeah,
so you
used
up 4 to 5 hours. Your wife, Monica, needs 8 or 9 hours. I need 8 or 9 hours.
And your wife doesn't need a lot.
My wife needs 5 or 6 hours.
Yeah.
She can get by
but
in 5 hours.
But 3 is too few.
3 is really, it's beneath the guideline. Every few days, do you sleep 6 hours?
No.
What time do you go to sleep at night?
If I'm working a day shift, I'll usually midnight to 3.
Uh-huh. So you go to sleep at midnight and you automatically wake up at 3. Do you nap during the day?
No.
How many years has this been going on?
7 to 8 years.
7 to 8 years. And you don't feel tired, you're not fatigued on the weekend. It's not your day.
I'm scared. What changed? I'm sorry to interrupt. What changed 7 or 8 years ago for you?
I suffer from post-traumatic stress disorder. I think there's a hint of Gulf War syndrome in there as well, which is where this came from. But there's no side effects. I'm not tired. I'm not groggy, loggy, anything like that. So I'm just curious if I'm doing my body any harm.
No, I don't think so. But I want to get back. If you sleep for longer, do the nightmares of PTSD come into your mind? Is that an issue also if you sleep too long?
No, I just can't stay down for more than 3 hours.
Gotcha.
I'm down for 3 and then I'm wide awake. Open and wide awake.
If you are mentally conscious, mm-hmm. if you're doing things, if you find you're not fatigued during the day and you're functioning, there is no absolute number in terms of sleep. I mean, we say 7 to 8 hours of sleep because we're sleep deprived, but there are people at both ends of the spectrum. There's some people who get 3 to 4 hours of sleep at night. There's a famous Lama Zopa, who has a variety of centers around the U.S., in Canada, worldwide, and he's reportedly sleeps about 2 to 3 hours a night. So you're in good hands. You're in the same shape as he is, and if it's not causing you problems so that you can't function, you are not doing your body harm.
Well, I bet you get either a lot of work done or have a lot of fun with 21-hour days, huh?
I get all kinds of things done on my hobbies. Yes, I do.
Well, good for you, and thanks for joining us.
Thanks a lot, guys.
And stay awake for the rest of the show.
Well, speaking of sleep, Zorba, let's take a question from Laurie in Buffalo, New York. Laurie was on an outdoor trip in the Adirondack Mountains trying to sleep next to a noisy stream. When she told her friend of the horrible night's sleep she had, he responded by saying that rest is just as good as full-out sleep for the body. Is this true?
Of course not. Rest is not the same as full-out sleep. Sleep is sleep. Rest is rest. I mean, they intermingle, but we need sleep to allow our brain to shut off. There's a chemical process that goes on that we really don't understand well. We know people who are sleep-deprived often have memory problems. If you stay and you have no sleep for 2 to 3 days, you hallucinate. You need your sleep for health. The proper amount of sleep for most of us is 7 to 8 hours. It's good for the heart. It's good for the brain. It's good for the body. It's not the same as rest.
Yeah. And in this case, Laurie was not resting, really. She was trying to go to sleep and was kept awake
by
the nearby
stream. Well, you think of a babbling brook. It'll be comfortable. It'll be resting. But if you're used to a quiet room and there's this water going by, maybe it's not. A good example is we've got cousins in Soho in New York. And in the middle of the night, the garbage truck always goes by. Yeah. First time I was there, I talked to my cousin and I said, what time does the garbage truck come by? It wakes me up all the time. And he said, oh, the garbage truck? Oh, I haven't heard that in years. So, you know, you learn how to shut off sounds. And if you're used to a quiet room and you're by a babbling brook, yes, it might keep you awake.
Seems to me we maybe have 3 things going on. Sleep.
Yes.
Rest.
Yes.
When you're actually just lying there and feeling comfortable. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing is trying to get to sleep
and being kept awake by some kind of noise. You've got it right there. That's unpleasant. Rest is pleasant. Sleep is pleasant. Trying to get to sleep from rest when you can't get to sleep is unpleasant. Yeah, we all know that. But the reality is sleep and rest are not the same. You need your sleep.
Nothing annoying about your emails. We always like hearing from you, so keep those questions, tips, and comments coming. Just send them in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
You'll want to stick around. We have lots more of your calls coming up. Coming up next, though, is Vicky's Shrimp and Bacon couscous. Vicky will be with us on the phone. Our medical mythbuster is later on here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. With Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Our toll-free number again, 800-462-7413. We'll get back to the phones, but now it's recipe time. This one from Vicki Neidert in Kodak, Tennessee. Vicki, hi.
Hello, guys. It's great to talk with you today.
Thanks so much for sending along this recipe, which is Vicki's Shrimp and Bacon Couscous. Vicki, how did you come up with this one?
Well, you know, you're just standing in the kitchen one day and you're saying, what can I do different for dinner tonight?
That happens to me all the time. Over and over again, standing there in the kitchen, a refrigerator full of veggies, and saying, how can I put them together this time?
You know, take your Prozac, Tom. That's what you need to do. Take your Prozac.
So you just said what? I'm going to throw all this stuff together and call it Vicki's something or other?
Yes, because my garden was just coming in, and I had like about a half a cup of peas, fresh peas out of the garden, some different sizes of green onion and tomato, and I had the couscous, and I love couscous. So I said, and I've got shrimp in the freezer. So that's how it happened.
So, okay, why don't we put this one together?
See, it's a wonderful, great-looking recipe. So let's start. First, we'll go through the ingredients.
Sure.
Start out with 32 jumbo shrimp frozen, and I assume, you know, it's a function of how important the guests are who come to the
as
house
to how big the shrimp
determines the size of the shrimp. We know that the more important guest gets the bigger shrimp, and if it's the family, they get the little popcorn shrimp.
I'll remember that the next time you invite us
over.
That's right.
You can tell the importance of the guest by the size of the shrimp.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's right. So it's jumbo shrimp.
Let me ask you, Vicki, how many does this serve?
Well, I put 32 shrimp in it for just my husband and I because he loves shrimp.
Wow.
But it can serve four individuals
now,
comfortably.
But I've got a question. When I take out shrimp, I kind of just take it out of the bag and pour it. You know, I use a pound or a half pound. How did you decide 32 jumbo frozen shrimp?
I counted them.
That'll do it.
All right. Let's. Okay.
Because, you know, at least eight shrimp per person if you're going to serve four people.
Now, I've got another question for you. You obviously love to entertain people, and you obviously love to serve people.
Exactly.
I mean, you really like it because, yeah, Tom is looking at me in a quizzical look.
No,
because,
you
know, only somebody who does that looks at it. What do you do for a living?
Actually, I no longer work. I'm retired. I'm a former human resource officer.
Human resource
officer. Now, Zorba, this is an hour-long show.
I'm sorry. That's right. All right. I'm sorry. Five pieces low-sodium bacon. Right. Good to use. There's less salt. We always want to take salt out of our diet. 1/2 cup of fresh green peas.
Half a cup of fresh green peas.
A good example of how to use those fresh peas. Fresh peas are great. You can use frozen, I assume?
You can. It's just what you have on hand. Mm-hmm. I feel that the fresh peas have a better flavor.
They do. You are right. Half a cup of water. Teaspoon of butter.
Teaspoon. You don't want to talk about the water for a while?
Yeah. Teaspoon of butter.
Teaspoon of butter.
Good example of how to use butter in the right way for flavoring, you know, versus using a glob of it on top of a potato and, you know, it tastes better. Butter is best.
And just a teaspoon.
Small green onion.
A little green onion.
Third of a cup of couscous.
Third of a cup of couscous.
Three. And I use the original couscous, not a flavored couscous, but the original.
You know, you bring up a good point, because when I go to the store, I always get couscous. I never get flavored couscous, and I've been eating couscous for years. And many years ago, that's all you could get, but you're right. Now you can get couscous that is flavored with garlic or flavored with olive oil.
But now the original, correct me if I'm wrong, has no taste.
Well, it's pasta. Yeah, so does pasta have a taste? It has a texture. Pasta has a taste, sure.
Nah, not really.
It has a taste, but it takes on the taste of other things. Yeah. So you're right. Yeah. It's a texture more than a taste. Three cloves of garlic.
Three cloves of garlic.
Large cloves of garlic.
Large cloves of garlic. Large cloves. So if you love garlic, you could use six or eight cloves of garlic if you're really into garlic, which I am. I always double garlic in every recipe because I love it. Two medium green onions.
Two medium green onions.
Two medium celery stalks.
Two medium celery stalks.
Mm-hmm. One medium tomato.
A medium tomato.
Do you ever use canned tomatoes in this?
No, I've never used canned tomato in this recipe.
Yeah, it wouldn't. I don't think it would go with this recipe. Freshly ground black pepper.
Mm-hmm.
And nutmeg, ground nutmeg to taste. You've got to have the nutmeg, the little nutmeg nuts, which is what they must be. And you've got to have a little, you know, something to zest it off.
Ooh, this sounds really good.
And if you don't have it, do not use it. Ground nutmeg does not taste anywhere near the same.
Okay.
I'm sure you must agree, Vicki, that it's got to be fresh. Okay.
Yes.
So feel free to chime in as we tell people.
Well, this is a difficult one to put together, Vicki, am I right?
No, it's actually not. It's very simple because you'll see as we go along, it's like three or four different steps, and you're only using two pots.
Yes, but for Tom, anything other than opening it up and putting it into the microwave gives a level of difficulty that he has trouble stepping up to the plate to do.
You're right.
I mean, you know, the reality is, you know, but for me, but...
This is a lengthy process, but is really easy. Do I get that?
it's actually easier than you think, Tom.
But it's more than tearing over in the wrapper and putting it in your mouth.
It's more than that, but it's really easy. And everything comes together, you know, simultaneously in the end. So it's going to be worth the little bit of work.
Sounds great. Okay, in a 3-quart pan, bring the water, peas, onion and butter to a boil. Cover it tightly, remove from the heat, and quickly stir in the couscous. Cover and set it aside. Couscous is really an instant thing. You put the water in after it boils, you put the couscous in, and you do nothing. And that'll fit with the directions on the couscous.
Right.
Now, while the couscous is absorbing the water, chop the onions, garlic, celery, and tomato, and keep the tomato in a separate prep bowl, because otherwise it's gonna mix in with there not the way you want to. And also keep the green onion tops separate, because you're going to use this as the topping later on.
Exactly.
Then in a large skillet, fry the bacon until extra crispy. Remove the skillet from the heat. Then open the lid to the couscous and add the chopped tomatoes and the crumbled bacon into the pan. Remove a couple of tablespoonfuls of bacon drippings and set that aside. So you're going to use that oil for flavoring.
Right.
Then return the skillet to medium heat. Add the celery, garlic, chopped onion bulbs, and cook until almost soft. Remove from the heat and add to the couscous pan. Then, once again, it sounds complex, but it's not. It's really, you've done a beautiful job of separating this out.
Right, and you really need to keep that lid on those items after you add them, because you want to keep that warmth in there.
The warmth in there. Very, I mean, this is really laid out beautifully. Return the skillet to medium heat. Coat with bacon drippings. Generously sprinkle the bottom of the pan with ground black pepper and nutmeg, that freshly zested nutmeg. Increase the heat to high. Add the shrimp. Brown quickly front to back. Very important with shrimp. When we're talking 3 minutes, we're talking 3 minutes.
Exactly.
Because if you put it on for 6 or 7 minutes, it will be mealy. Shrimp, as soon as it's done, you're done. It's really important with shrimp. And that's why shrimp often in a restaurant tastes better, because they time it or they're watching it. Never leave shrimp.
Exactly.
Remove from the heat. Add the couscous to the mixture skillet. Toss, cover for 10 minutes so it all warms up. Then serve topped with the reserved green onions. This is a dynamite recipe. This is an easy step-by-step recipe. I can see what you said. This is not complex. It just has a few steps to it. Great recipe. I love it.
Oh, I'm so happy. You know, this is the very first time I've ever shared a recipe with anyone.
Thank you for sharing this for all. I am sure our listeners and our podcast listeners are going to love this. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Vicki, thanks a lot.
Thank you, guys. Have a great day.
You too. And for sending us this recipe, Vicki gets a free copy of our cookbook, Heart Healthy, Low Fat, Guilt-Free, and Tasty Recipes from the Kitchen of Zorba Pastor. And if you want to enter our recipe contest, it's easy. Just email your original low-fat recipe to us at
zorba@wpr.org.
Now, for today's recipe, send a stamped, self-addressed, business-sized envelope to Zorba Pastor on Your Health, 821 University Avenue, Madison, Wisconsin, 53706.
And if you want this recipe and the nutritional analysis, by the way, 140 calories per serving, which makes it a very, very low-calorie recipe, just go to our website. You can find it there, and you can sign up for our weekly recipe podcast and search all of your favorite Zorba Pastor on Your Health recipes. That's at zorbapastor.org.
Our toll-free number is 800-462-7413. And Zorba, our next caller is in Fishhaven, Idaho.
Hey, how you guys doing today?
Fine. How can we help you?
Well, here's my situation. About 2 years ago, a little over 2 years ago, I found out that I was borderline diabetic.
Mm-hmm.
And they pretty much found it at the onset. I was in denial for quite a while, and then I started changing my eating habits. Currently, I'm on oral medication. And what's the best way of putting this? I want to live a diabetic life without having to deal with the meds. I want to get off the meds and live as clean as possible.
Okay. Are you overweight?
Slightly.
Okay.
I'm about 220.
Okay. Well, 220. How tall are you?
6'2".
Okay. So that's the first thing you do with diabetes is you want to get to the right weight. Crucial. Very, very important. Now, you're on a diabetic pill or you're on injections?
I'm on the pill. Okay. I don't ever want to have to take the injection.
Okay. Well, hopefully you won't. Nobody ever likes to take those injections. When I tell people they need injections, the first thing they do is they go, really? I don't want to have injections. And but if they need them, they actually feel better on it, but you don't. So Right. And frankly, most people in America hate needles. They don't like it. But not going to belabor that. The needles, the tininess of the injections, if they need it, people really step up to the plate and do it. But you're not there yet. You may never be there. So the way that you can try to control your diabetes, you may do it without pills, you may not. The way you control it is by diet and exercise. So your weight can't be slightly overweight. Your weight has to be right in there. That means you've got a BMI, which you can look at on the web. You write down BMI, a little calculator pop-up. You put in your height. You put in your weight. It gives you a number. And your goal is to be below 25, between 20 and 25. If you're at 26 to 30, you know, you're at the beginning, you know, you're overweight. And over 30, you're an obese. Now, you know, it's not quite like that, but those are the numbers. So in order for you to try to do it without pills, which may be possible, your weight has to be perfect and you got to exercise every day, probably 30 minutes. That's the goal. And no matter what, even with the pills, that is going to dramatically increase your longevity.
We appreciate the call. 1-800-462-7413, our toll-free number. And a listener now, Zorba in Jacksonville, Florida. Hi.
Zorba. Hi, Tom.
How can we help you?
Well, I'm itching to talk to you about poison ivy.
Oh, tell us.
Well, I have it, and I'm itching.
Oh,
and I
yeah. All right. Sorry, we didn't catch the, the pun there.
No, I caught the pun right away, and I thought, she has poison ivy on her regular. I didn't realize you have poison ivy now. Wow.
I have it now.
Wow. Leaves of three, let it be. So where'd you get it?
I got it from my backyard on a fence line, which I had contact with about 2 weeks ago, 2 weeks before I broke out.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Or from my kitty cat. Uh-huh. I have a feral kitty cat that I feed.
Well, you've got two excellent sources. Kitty cats bring it in all the time because they rustle through the poison ivy, and the oil, the ruis, I think it's R-H-E-U-S, the oil that's on top of the poison ivy plant can stay on cats for a long time. Bring it in, and you've got to be, you really do have to be careful with that.
It's been
cat.
In the news. There's a kind of a super poison ivy going around now.
It's always the same material. It depends. If you've got a good year for corn, corn, you've got a good year for poison ivy.
Well, this must be a good year for corn.
It's a good year for corn. It's a good year for poison ivy. If it grows more, it produces more oil. Yeah. Well, first of all, a few things about poison ivy. You get it now, but you break out later. So you don't break out that moment. It may be 3 days to 2 weeks, roughly, is when you break out. Comes out in crops. So if you've ever planted lettuce or peas or carrots, they don't pop out the same day. They pop out over a period of a few days. Mm-hmm. And so you may get it, and the oil may be gone, and it may be in the right arm, and then 2 days later it's in the left arm or it's in the skin. It's a very it's a rash that you can look at on the web to see what it looks like. Often it's in a straight line if you've got it from a plant, because the plant brushes against you.
Mm-hmm.
And a first thing to do, of course, is, you know, make sure if you've got other stuff around, have somebody else clean it out, have them wear rubber gloves. You know, what you do is you get dressed up in a moon suit.
Mm-hmm.
Seriously, as much as you can, you cover your body. If you can't get anybody else, you take rubber gloves and you remove the stuff, or you go for something like Roundup. I know that's not politically correct, but when it comes to poison ivy, sometimes I have been known to use politically incorrect chemicals to get rid of it. Because you have to get rid of it. That's otherwise your cat's going to be there and you're going to reinfect yourself. Treatment, over-the-counter, something called Domboro, D-O-M-B-O-R-O. These are little tablets that go in water. They make a little solution, and you use a terry cloth, washcloths, and put it right over the poison ivy.
Hmm.
Feels better. Over-the-counter hydrocortisone cream may work also. If not, you need a stronger cream from your doctor. Benadryl at night for itching really helps with the itching. Tylenol or Motrin or Aleve for pain. It helps with the pain. And
Well, I have a question, too. Am I contagious?
Well, once you clean the oil off your skin, you are not contagious. So once you take a shower and once your clothes have been washed, once again, handle them with rubber gloves. Once they've been washed, you are not contagious. You can't spread it from one person to the other. But if you've got the oil on your skin, let's assume you've got oil on your skin, and let's assume that you have have an intimate relationship with somebody,
mm-hmm.
and they come into contact with your skin, skin to skin, oil to oil, yes. Yes.
Thanks.
Very good.
Thanks so much for the call.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. 800-462-7413. Zorba, let's help out another listener from the Zorba Pasture on Your Health inbox. This question comes to us from Andy in Madison, Wisconsin. Andy writes, "Dear Dr. Zorba, my girlfriend and I will be having our first child in just over 6 months. My girlfriend is a vegetarian, and I, on the other hand, will eat any animal, aardvark through zebra. My girlfriend wants to raise our child as a vegetarian. While I see no problem with having meat in our diet, especially if that meat is a medium-rare T-bone cooked over an open flame, I'm concerned with the level of protein a growing child will need. I know about soy and tofu, but I don't think that it's safe to limit a child's diet during a crucial phase of development." And you know where I come down on this argument.
Yeah, right, right. You're definitely not in the tofu section. Well, you can raise a child as a vegetarian, and the child will grow up just fine. Look at India.
Maybe a little overly politically correct.
That's right.
Just fine.
but just fine. That's exactly it. You know, there's vegetarianism and there's veganism. So vegetarianism, that means that you can have milk, cheese, yogurt, eggs, and frankly, there's a lot of protein in those. So, you know, you're just fine. If you limit your child and they're a vegan, then you have to pay more attention to protein for a growing child. You really do. And you've got to make sure that your child gets enough soy protein and other protein in their diet. But, I mean, milk, cheese, yogurt, I mean, you know, these are kids that, you know, these are things that kids like, and there'll be no problem at all. They do not need the T-bone steak. So in this case, girlfriend one, guy zero.
Oh, wait a minute. I guess. That's from the doc. We enjoy hearing from carnivores and vegetarians alike, so join the fun by sending an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
We have more research. We have our medical myth buster and more of your calls coming up on Zorba Pasture on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Again, our number is 800-462-7413. But Zorba, before we get back to the phone, some really, really interesting and I'm guessing important information on obesity and an intriguing question. Is obesity contagious?
Fascinating in one way. In one way, the answer is yes, and it's a fascinating study. Let me tell you what the study is.
Sure.
Framingham Heart Study, going on from the early 70s through today. Okay, so Framingham Heart Study. And what they found in Framingham is this sort of connection. The way they began to find these connections are when you signed up for the study, and most of the people in the town did, they said, we want a couple of friends in case we lose track of you because it's a longitudinal study. We want people who we can call.
Yeah.
So give us the names of a couple of relatives and a couple of friends. So what the researchers went back is they looked at the relatives and they looked at their close friends because you name a friend or two is going to know where you are. And then they followed. And most of those people were in the study. And they followed those people and followed the connections now for 30 years. And here's what they found. If your good buddy got heavy, fat, obese, you got heavy, fat, and obese. If your neighbor became heavy, it had no effect on you at all. If your relative became heavy, it had some effect, but not nearly as effective as your friend.
Yeah.
And if your friend was of the same sex as you were, a boyfriend, a guy friend, or a lady friend, you were much more likely to be heavy. And then there were clones. There were some people who really were connected to lots of other people, sort of a major friend to lots of other folks. If they got heavy, most of the people in their group got heavy. The mutual friends all got heavy. So heaviness spreads across social relationships.
But to call it contagion is a little misleading because this is lifestyle we're talking about.
It is, absolutely, but it's misleading, but it has a way of explaining the fact that there are connections between friends.
I mean,
it's a good buzzword.
If I'm heavy, I tend maybe to hang out with other people who eat a lot. And yeah.
You got it. And more importantly, what happens is this. This is the theory. The theory now is that when you become a little bit heavier and your other friends become a little bit heavier, you now assume that's normal. And then over time, everyone gets another pound or 2 pounds heavier because the weight comes on generally at 2 to 4 pounds a year.
Yeah, you break out the cake and ice cream and nobody says, wait a minute, shouldn't we be eating
all this? The same, though, is true for people who then became thinner. If they became thinner and their cohort became thinner, too. So in other words, the way to reduce weight in America is not to go by yourself to Weight Watchers or somewhere else. It's to give up your friends. Give up your friends. Well, that was an editorial in the New York Times. Does it say give up your friends? No. The answer is encourage your friends to make healthy lifestyle changes too, and that will help you along the way. Don't just go to a random group. Go with your friends and do something as a group, and you're more likely to embrace health because just like obesity may be contagious, health is contagious too.
800-462-7413, our toll-free number. Zorba, a listener with us now in Shawnee, Oklahoma. Hi.
Hi.
How can we help you?
Well, recently I had a physical, and as part of the blood test, of course, I checked my cholesterol, and it came back as a little high. It's 224. The bad cholesterol, the LDL, is in the 150s. And I have been trying to make some changes. Now, I'm really very careful about what I eat. I'm not overweight or anything. I exercise, so forth. So it might be hereditary. However, I tried to take Zetia, didn't like it. So I talked with my doctor, and I'm trying to control it with diet and exercise, and we'll see how that goes.
Mm-hmm.
However, one of the things I've been doing is eating oatmeal, and because that's supposed to help. And I talked to a person in a health food store, and I don't know how reliable she is, but one of the things she said was that if I microwave the oatmeal, that takes away the cholesterol-removing effect. And I was just wondering if you've heard anything about that. Does the way I cook the oatmeal affect what it does for my cholesterol?
I don't think so. I don't think it has any effect at all. Now, we know that heating by any method, be it microwave or anywhere else, can destroy vitamins because vitamins are very heat sensitive. And it's not as if you're eating the oatmeal just for vitamins. You're eating other things too. But how you heat it up, I've never seen anything that shows that it makes a difference. Fiber is fiber. And that's what you're actually there. It's a pretty, there's soluble fiber and insoluble fiber. and they're two different kinds. But pretty much, you know, you don't affect it that much by cooking. I mean, you cook it to warm up the oatmeal, but I do not believe that the reliable person at the health food store is doing that. You know, people who often are in health food stores usually don't like microwaves. I mean, it you know, it tends to go hand in hand. People eat fast food and are the opposite of health food people love microwaves, and sometimes that's all they have in their, you know, their room, in their kitchen. They may not even have a stove. Yeah. But on the whole, microwaves are not politically correct, and cooking with gas is politically correct from two ends, or even wood. You know, they're kind of two ends of the spectrum. It's an odd thing, but that's the way it is. Mm-hmm. So you always hear a story about microwave being bad or good. But the real issue with cooking the oatmeal in the microwave is you've got to choose a microwave-safe container to cook it in. And the reason is you don't need those plastic particles dissolving and swallowing them in the body. It's got to be microwave-safe. It shouldn't be a cottage cheese container, for instance, which is what a lot of people use.
Yes, I've been cooking it in a glass container.
Glass is okay. Glass, yeah. Glass is inert. Glass is okay. Mm-hmm. But that's a big issue. A lot of people just use junky containers to put it in the microwave, and I don't believe in that. It's got to be microwave safe. Do it the right way.
Okay. Well, I appreciate your answers very much, and I will take them to heart. Thank you very much.
Sure. Thank you very much for the call. We appreciate it. 800-462-7413, toll free. Zorba, it's time for our medical Mythbuster segment. We have a listener myth today from Jason in Winthrop, Washington. Jason asks, is Coca-Cola good for an upset stomach? I've groaned loudly each time the kids get a tummy ache, and my wife would say to the little darling, honey, you need some Coke to make you feel better. How about it, Zorba? Can soda help fight off a stomach ache?
Well, you know, my mother said exactly the same thing. And my uncle Sal, who died many, many years ago, who was a pharmacist, mm-hmm. used to have Coke syrup that he would essentially hand out in the drugstore in these little kind of containers. And you would take Coke syrup and you would mix it in with water so it didn't have fizz in it. My mom always said, well, it relaxes your stomach if you take the fizz out of it and you drink it. And in fact, when you look at carbonated water and the history of carbonated water in America, they were in soda fountains and drugstores. Why? Because they were thought to be healthy.
Yeah.
Hey, if it works for your kids and they stop complaining of an upset stomach and they make it feel better, it's just fine.
Well, does that mean that there is some...
Stamped. It's my approval. Old-fashioned. I'm not going against my mom. No. She said soda was okay. A lot of the fizz out of the soda. It does help some people relax.
When my daughter was a little tiny baby... My wife and I couldn't figure out how to deal with this crying at one point, and we got so exasperated, we placed the call to my Uncle Ben, Dr. Ben Pearson, and said, the baby is crying. We're afraid. What's wrong? What's wrong? And Uncle Ben on the phone said, have you tried giving her some 7-Up? And we said no. We gave her some 7-Up, and immediately
that was it.
Yeah,
that was it. Hey, whatever works, it works. Yeah. That's exactly it. You've got it.
Do you have a myth for Zorba? We'll try to bust it or prove it right. Just send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
800-462-7413 is our toll-free number. Our next caller, Zorba, is in Dodgeville, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi. How are you doing?
Fine. How can we help you?
For a while now, I've been making some strange noises as I sleep, and I'm going to be heading off to college soon, and I was hoping that you could help me so I don't drive my roommate insane.
You don't want to drive your roommate insane.
Some strange noises?
Yeah, it's kind of like I'm fucking on my tongue. Here, let me try.
All right.
Can you hear that?
Yeah.
All right, that's the kind of noise that I make.
Well, why don't you just stop making it?
While I'm sleeping.
Oh, you're asleep when you're making. I get it.
Uh-huh. And you've been doing this since you've been a little kid, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. A couple things. Do you have allergies?
No, I don't.
Don't have allergies? You don't take any antihistamines, nasal sprays, or anything else?
No.
Okay. I've got a simple suggestion that it has a 90% success rate.
Oh, 90% is good.
What you need is to call your doctor. You need to get a steroid nasal spray that we give for allergies, one puff in each nostril, and that may do it. And if that doesn't work, you take two puffs. And what it does is it stops the sensation in the back of the nose and the upper part of the small palate, which is what you're doing. And the reason why I know this works is my oldest son, Zach, used to do it, and it would drive us crazy.
The same thing.
The same thing. It would be the middle of the night. He'd be making these sounds. We were sure he was dying. We used to get up, and finally everyone in the family kind of accepted the fact that, oh, that's Zach's sound. Don't worry about it. The middle of the night, it's that weirdo sound, and it's okay. And what happened was we used a steroid nasal spray, it went away. And now he doesn't use it. I mean, he sort of only uses it intermittently. So that would be my recommendation. Steroid nasal spray, it'll change it. If another idea before you go to the doc to get that may work is a saline nasal spray. They're over-the-counter without a prescription, something called Ocean, and that may work before the steroid, but you probably need the steroid spray.
All right. Well, thank you.
Sure. Thanks. Appreciate the call. And Zorba, before we go, let me read you this email from Marty in Standish, Michigan. Marty writes, Dr. Zorba, on a recent show, you stated that one should never clean one's ears with Q-tips. However, you did not address the real reason people have Q-tips in their medicine cabinets. On that rare occasion when your ear has an itch, I would bet that even you, Zorba Pastor, would kill for a Q-tip. I'm sure that while you can justify using it by telling yourself that you're a trained professional, the rest of us just lose ourselves in the bliss of a well-scratched ear. I am convinced that Van Gogh didn't cut off his ear because he was depressed, but because his ear itched and he didn't have a Q-tip.
Well, you're right on. I definitely have used Q-tips in my ears to scratch an itch. And I do believe, because I'm a trained professional, that I'm okay. And when I use a Q-tip in my ear, gosh, it's like they peered right into my room. When I do use the ear, I think, I've got to be really careful with this because I don't want to come in and poke that into my ear too soon. It's exactly right. Well, the answer is yes. I do that. Of course, the issue with the wax is that you're going in deeper to the ear to do that, but I've been caught.
Just let us know your thoughts. Just send them in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
If you missed anything during the show or want to download our recipe podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org.
And we'll see you next week, Zorba.
Take care, Tom, and stay well.
Don't forget, you can bug our producer anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's produced by Adam Friedrich. Our executive producer is Charles Monroe Kane. Brad Kohlberg makes sure you can hear us, and Gigi Holland fills your recipe requests. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, hoping you'll join us for the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 0811Z. More on healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, show archives, and listener feedback, is available online at ZorbaPastor.org. That's ZorbaPastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.